Hello everyone, welcome to the new edition of Kosher Tidbits. Today we're going to discuss more about the traveling and halachic issues that arise. We're going to be discussing today the challenges related to travel and prayer, as well as eating kosher food on the road. I want to point out at the outset, so as not to be misunderstood, that this is in no way minimizing the importance of prayer, which is one of the things that our sages teach us as Berumo Shel Olam, at the heights of the universe. Besides being so vitally important for the very earthly reason of submitting our requests before God, it also serves to help us attach ourselves and forge a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, with God Himself. One of the Hasidic masters, Bunim of Pshishka, commented on the story in Bereshis, in the first section, where the serpent convinced Adam and Eve to partake of the forbidden fruit. God told the serpent, "Because you have done this, you are more cursed than all the cattle and beasts of the field. On your stomach you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life." While dust would not be considered a tasty diet, it is certainly plentiful and always accessible. God seems to have blessed the snake with a promise that he would never go hungry. So this doesn't seem to be much of a curse. So the explanation, Rabbanu explains, that in actuality, this was the ultimate curse. Because when God pronounced upon man, "By the sweat of your brow you shall eat bread," that guarantees that when a person finds himself short of food, he'll pour out his heart in prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God Himself. Similarly, when a woman was cursed, "In pain you shall build children," she'll ultimately pray to Hashem for His compassion in giving birth. Both of these curses are a means to assure that man will always have the motivation to forge a bond with Hashem by coming before Him in prayer. The serpent, on the other hand, was provided with all its needs. As a result, the serpent would never have reason to ask Hashem for anything, and thus would never forge a connection with Him. This was the ultimate curse. Of all the benefits one can ask for in prayer, there is no greater benefit than the ability, the desire, and the need to pray. Through prayer, our needs and wants become the source of our greatest blessing, closest to Hashem. So we are going to discuss halachic issues that arise for the traveler relating to prayer. This is not in any way minimizing the importance of prayer. We do not look at prayer as a chore that has to be done, but rather it's a privilege. Prayer, according to Jewish law, has set times, and the challenge of meeting these times when one has to travel is our discussion. A frequent traveler often is up before dawn. At the beginning of his day, he's faced with a major question. How early can he pray the morning service? This is particularly relevant when one must catch an early flight. Now, there are two different sets of zmanim. Zmanim are halachic times that are relevant in order to pray the morning service. The first one is the proper time to pray the Shemona Esrei, and the second time is the proper time to say the Shema. The optimal time to begin saying the Shemona Esrei is what's known as Kevasikin or Hanetzachama, which is the precise moment of sunrise. If one cannot pray at sunrise, it is preferable to pray after sunrise until the end of the Zman, until one may no longer pray. In cases of necessity, one may say the Shemona Esrei before sunrise, as long as he prays after Alos HaShachar, dawn, which is 72 minutes before sunrise. Preferably, one should say Kriya Shema, that's the Shema, after Mishayakir. Mishayakir is when there's enough light outside, when one can tell a person, recognize a person who is not overly familiar with, just in a casual acquaintance from a distance of 4 cubits. So preferably one should say the Kriya Shema after Mishayakir. And one has three halachic hours to say the Kriya Shema. If one cannot say Kriya Shema after Mishri Akir, he'll be at work very, very early, or he'll be traveling in a place where it would be very difficult for him to recite the Shema, he can say it after dawn, followed by the Shemoneh Esrei. If possible, he should repeat the Shema again later, after Mishri Akir. Alos HaShachar, dawn, is 72 minutes before HaNetzachama, before the sunrise. There are various opinions regarding the Zman, the time of Mishri Akir. The opinions range from 66 minutes before Hanetz to as little as 35 minutes before Hanetz. Generally, most rabbinic decisors have opined in the northeastern United States that the opinion of 60 minutes before Hanetz can be relied upon. Based on the above, there are four different levels of preference regarding when to recite Kriya Shema and Shemoneh Esrei. Optimally, the Kriya Shema should be recited just before sunrise and Shemoneh Esrei at the precise moment of sunrise. The second option is both the Kriya Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei may be recited after sunrise as long as one recites the Kriya Shema and Shemoneh Esrei before the end of the respective Zmanim, before one may no longer say the Shema Shemoneh Esrei. Kriya Shema can be said after Mishri Akir, followed by Shemoneh Esrei, and the fourth choice is, in case of necessity, one may recite Kriya Shema after dawn, followed by the Shemoneh Esrei. Ordinarily, one must say the concluding blessing of Kriya Shema, known as Gol Yisrael, immediately prior to the Shemoneh Esrei. This is known as Sovech Gula Tefillah, juxtaposing the redemption as represented by the blessing of Gol Yisrael to the prayer of the Shemoneh Esrei. This applies even if one will then have to say the Shemoneh Esrei while sitting down. For example, if one can say Kriya Shema after Mishri Akir but will be in a public place and embarrassed to stand up and pray, then he should still be Sovech Gula Tefillah and say the Shemoneh Esrei sitting down. An example would be like on an airplane. If one can say Kriya Shema after Mishri Akir, but it will be necessary to say the Shemoneh Esrei while traveling in a plane, a car, or train, the halacha assumes one will not have kavana, that's adequate concentration, in order to recite the Shemoneh Esrei, but will have enough concentration to recite the first verse of the Shema. There are two options in this scenario. The opinion of the Shulchan Aruch is that one may separate the Shemoneh Esrei from Kriya Shema, and that there's no requirement to be Samech Gula Tefillah. Accordingly, one can say the Shemoneh Esrei after dawn, before he sets out, and then later after Mishri Akir, say the Shema with its blessings. There is a second opinion, known as the opinion of the Magen Avraham, who maintains that the accepted practice is to be Samech Gula Tefillah and pray while traveling. So in all circumstances, one should not separate the Shema and its blessings from the Shemoneh Esrei, according to Magen Avraham, which seems to be the general practice. Birchas HaShachar and Birchas HaTorah, these are the morning blessings that one makes upon arising, and the blessing that one makes every day for the privilege of learning Torah. These blessings may be recited before dawn, with the exception of the first of the Birchas HaShachar, known as Hanosan L'Sechvi, which preferably should be recited after dawn. Karbanos, which is the section of the morning prayers that discusses the sacrifices, should not be recited before dawn unless one is short on time, in which case he may recite it even then. Psukhti Zimra, these are the psalms of praise, which form part of the daily morning service, may be recited before Mishri Akir, and if one is pressed for time, even before dawn. If one is awake before dawn and washes Netilas Yadayim, he should wash again after dawn without a blessing. The proper time to put on Talas and Tefillin is, again, Mishri Akir also. in pressing circumstances, one may put them on before Mashiach or recite a blessing after Mashiach. Now we're going to discuss the eating on the road, which are very common questions. Very often, when you get to a place where there is a microwave oven, people would like to use the microwave oven to heat up some food that they either took with them or just bought. Question is, can a microwave oven be used without kashering it, without kosherizing it? So if the item is double wrapped, there is no problem. If for some reason you would not like to have the item double wrapped and you actually want to go ahead and kosherize it, it may be kosherized by letting it sit idle for 24 hours if you have the 24 hours and cleaning it well prior to that. Once it's clean, place a bowl of water inside the oven and turn it on for 15 minutes. Additionally, boiling water must be poured on the bottom of the microwave and the glass bottom. One who is preparing his own food may buy kosher fish in a fish store that also sells non-kosher fish, as long as he sees the scales on the fish he is buying. Assuming he doesn't have a knife with him, if he's traveling, it's unlikely, he should ask the proprietor to wash the knife with soap and cold water. If one feels uncomfortable doing this, he may wash the fish thoroughly with tepid water after he buys it and after it has been cut. He should then lightly scrape the cut surface of the fish with a knife edge when he returns to his hotel. May one eat in a non-kosher restaurant? The answer is no. One may not eat a vegetable salad in a non-kosher restaurant or in a vegan restaurant that does not have kosher certification either. There are a few reasons for this. One is the Bishul Akram problem. The other is the insect infestation problem, among other issues. It is permissible to buy a kosher drink at a food stand that also sells non-kosher food. One may buy cut-up melons or fruit in the fruit section of a supermarket and does not have to worry about the status of the knives. A common problem encountered by kosher travelers is how to determine which hechsherim, kosher certifications, are reliable. Unfortunately, there is no simple solution. An important point that must be made before we continue that the traveler himself must have a clear understanding of himself and his own standards. This sounds obviously simple. Of course, everyone knows his own standards. Unfortunately, this is not always true. For example, if you ask, can I eat in such and such a restaurant? The appropriate response is, what kind of meat do you eat? If the response is glatt, then what type of glatt? There are three different sources for glatt meat in the United States. Which one or two do you allow in your house? Are all three acceptable? Do you know the differences, if any, between them? Furthermore, what standards exist vis-a-vis Bishul Akum in your home? Is a pilot acceptable? Do you require that a Shomer Shabbos turn the oven on? Are you strict about the opinion of the Beis Yosef in this regard? Most people, though sincere and well-intentioned, cannot answer these questions even if they have thought about them. Be that as it may, it is very difficult for a rabbi to answer the question, can I eat in such and such a restaurant? Or when I go to a different city, can I rely on the local vat? Ultimately, the only one who can give a definitive answer to this type of question is you yourself. Once the answers to the above questions are clear in your own mind, then you can try to find out more about the kosher certifications of the place you're traveling to. A good resource is the Jewish Traveler's Resource Guide by Jeff Seidel. You can also look up websites for the synagogues in the cities of your destination. There may be someone to contact prior to your arrival who can give you some useful information. If you would like to check a restaurant's hechsher on your own, you can ask the following sample questions to the rabbi given the hechsher. What kind of meat is allowed into the restaurant? Concerning the history of the restaurant, were the utensils purchased brand new or they previously used? And if previously used, were they kosherized? What controls does a rabbi maintain that there are no Bishul Akum concerns? What systems are in place to ensure that challah is separated? Do the proprietors under the rabbi's supervision have to be Shabbos observers? What type of vegetables does the rabbi allow in the restaurants under supervision? Only those that don't require checking? Or does he have a supervisor checking vegetables? For what types of restaurants does the certifying rabbi insist that there be a supervisor on the premises at all times? If you're satisfied with the responses you receive to your questions, ask the proprietor diplomatically to let you look in the back of the restaurant where the ingredients are stored, including the refrigerator. If he has no qualms about letting you look, it's a good sign. Go ahead and look. If you're pleased with both your discussion with the certifying rabbi and your investigation, remember to compliment the rabbi and the proprietor on their wonderful standards. All too often, we are not as careful with giving our approbation as we are giving our critical opinions, especially when you're in a small town, when you probably stand out displaying your religiousness via your insistence about kashrus. It is important to leave a pleasant impression. This concludes our discussion about traveling, and remember, wherever you go, you are an ambassador of Hashem, and it is always very important to leave that impression. Have a good day. Bye.